Okay. So, as I mentioned yesterday, today's sutta is called the Ratapala Sutta. Ratapala, he was a... Well, first of all, this is almost just like a continuation of what we have been doing so far. This sutta is a bit of a... almost a summary of some of the things of the Dhamma that we have been looking at throughout this these last few days. So it kind of summarizes it. It adds a few new points, but it's in large part a summary. And it's also just a very nice story. It's an interesting little story in the suttas. So for that reason, it's part of this this retreat. So the Ratapala Sutta. Ratapala, he was initially a young man at the time of the Buddha, and he lived in a place called the Kurus. The Kuru is somewhere to the west of where the Buddha usually was. And he was the son of a kind of a very wealthy family in this town, in the Kurus. And one day, as he was living there, I'm just telling you kind of the background story now. One day, as he was dwelling in this place, the Buddha came to town, right? He came to their village. Because people in those days, like now, are interested in spiritual matters, so the whole village kind of, or large part of the village, would go out to meet the Buddha, and one of the people who went out to meet him was Ratapala. And then when he heard the Buddha speak, he was so impressed and so inspired that straight away he went up to the Buddha and said, "I want to go forth, I want to become a monk." And the Buddha says, "Have you got the permission of your parents? This is one of the requirements in the Vinaya, in the monastic discipline, that you have the permission of your parents before you can go forth." And he said, "No. But I shall make sure that I get the permission of my parents." So he goes back to his parents and says, "Mother and father, please give me permission to go forth. I want to become a monk." And his parents say, "No way." That's what they say. Because they have very, very, very strong bonds of family bonds, right? And the son, particularly, perhaps he was the only son, and then they had to take over the business and they're supposed to continue the family lineage and all these kind of things. So parents say, "Absolutely no way that we're going to let you go forth. You are our only son, and without you, there is nothing. So you have to stay here." And then Ratapala, because he has so much faith, he says, "Well, in that case, I will lie down on the floor right here, and I will lie here until either I die or you allow me to go forth." So that's what he does. He lies down on the floor, and he lies there. And after a while, his parents get a bit worried, right? He's not eating, not drinking. He's just lying on the floor day after day. So eventually, they get a couple of friends of Ratapala, and they say to his friends, "Please, you know, convince him, get some sense into him. He obviously doesn't know what he's doing here." And then his friends realize that he's very determined. So his friends go to his parents and say, "Well, you know, if you continue like this, he will die. But if you allow him to go forth, at the very least, he will be able to come back and visit you later on." And his parents think, "Oh, yeah, that's the point." So they allow him to go forth, and he becomes a monk, and he goes off with the Buddha. And then, as it says in the sutta, it says that soon, in no long time, he attains arahantship. He becomes fully awakened, right? And then after this no long time, he then goes back again to visit his parents. No long time in the suttas is usually means, you know, 10, 20 years, something like that. So this is fast. We're talking about kind of attaining the highest spiritual goal in the Buddhist path. That's quite fast. Most people tend to take much longer than that. So that's quickly. So he goes back. And he goes back to visit his parents. And when he comes back, his parents don't really recognize him, right? It's been maybe 20 years, so they can't really recognize him straight away. But one of the slave girls or women or whatever in the house recognizes him and hears his voice. Oh, and she goes to his mother and says, "Oh, you know, I recognize you. Ratapala is back." And then they invite him for a meal. And then when they invite him for a meal, what they do is that they want to attract him back into household life, right? That's kind of the plot all along here. So his mother and father, they make two big piles of gold, and the piles of gold are so high you can't see across them, so they must be about 2 meters high or something. And in the middle of these two piles of gold, they put his former wives. His former wives must still be around. I'm not sure how this worked in India, but they're still there. So they dress them up, you know, make them look very nice, and put them kind of in between the two piles of gold. And then they invite Ratapala in there. And then Ratapala comes in, and he is an arahant, right? He's not interested in any of this anymore. He's given all that up. So then he calls his ex-wives, he calls them sisters. And when he does that, they faint. Because, that's how the story goes anyway. They faint because they expect something more than that. And then he tells his father, he says, householder, says to his father. His father taken a bit aback, being called householder by his son. So he says, householder, if I were you, I would take these two piles of gold and I would load them into carts and I would drive them down to the river Ganges and dump it all in the middle of the river Ganges. That's what he says to his father about the gold. Why is that? Because all this gold will just cause you problems and suffering in the future. And then his father is not happy. So this is the story, right? So this is the story about this Ratapala who has so much faith and so he actually is willing to go to this extreme to be able to go forth. It shows you how divided sometimes the worldview of somebody who's fully awakened and an ordinary person can be so divergent, right? That it's hard sometimes to communicate properly. Anyway, that's the story. And after that story, then Ratapala leaves his home. His parents realize there is no hope for him anymore, so they kind of allow him to go off. And then he goes off to this garden or this park, which is owned by the king, the local king, called King Kauravya. And this is where the real kind of Dhamma comes in at this particular point. And this is where this part of the sutta, which I am going to have a look at today, this is where that starts. So this is MN82, the Ratapala Sutta. It's towards the end of the suttas here. So let's see how this goes. So then the king, King Kauravya, who is the king of this area, he dressed his gamekeeper thus, good gamekeeper, tidy up the Migachira garden so that we may go to see the pleasure garden and see a pleasing spot. Yes, sire, he replied. Now, while he was tidying up the Migachira garden, the gamekeeper saw the venerable Ratapala seated at the root of a tree for the day's abiding. When he saw him, he went to King Kauravya and told him, sire, the Migachira garden has been tidied up. The clansman Ratapala is there, the son of the leading clan in this same Tulakotita, of whom you have always spoken highly. He is seated at the root of a tree for the day's abiding. The day's abiding is like the meditation, right? You've had your meal and you are kind of had the nourishment for the day, and then you go out to meditate, and that's often called the day's abiding. You just sit down at the root of a tree somewhere. So then the king responds, then, good gamekeeper, enough of the pleasure garden for today. Now we shall go to pay respects to that master Ratapala. Then, saying, give away all the food that has been prepared there, King Kauravya had a number of state carriers prepared, and mounting one of them, accompanied by the other carriages, he drove out from Tulakotita with a full pomp of royalty to see the venerable Ratapala. He drove thus as far as a road was passable for carriages, and then he dismounted from his carriage and went forward on foot with a following of the most eminent officials to where the venerable Ratapala was. He exchanged greetings with the venerable Ratapala, and when this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he stood to one side and said, here is an elephant rug. Let Master Ratapala be seated on it. There is no need, great king. Sit down. I am sitting on my own mat. King Kauravya sat down on a seat made ready and said, it's interesting how you have these little details here, these little things which don't really add very much. This thing about the elephant rug, right? Here is this elephant rug. Sit down. No, thank you. And then it kind of moves on. It's completely redundant. It doesn't really add anything to the story. And these little things are what kind of make these things come alive, that kind of make them seem real, right? Why add something like that unless it has some kind of perhaps historical basis? It seems completely irrelevant. And this is what you often find in the suttas. You find these little things which are kind of strange and that don't really fit with everything else. And you wonder how it could have arisen unless there actually were real historical incidents of the time. So King Karavya sat down on the seat made ready and said, "Master Ratapala, there are four kinds of loss. Because they have undergone these four kinds of loss, some people here shave off their hair and beard, put on the yellow robe, and go forth from the home life into homelessness. What are the four? There are loss through aging, loss through sickness, loss of wealth, and loss of relatives." So, and what is loss through aging? "Here, Master Ratapala, someone is old, aged, burdened with years, advanced in life, come to the last stage, basically lost through old age. He considers thus, I am old, etc. It is no longer easy for me to acquire unacquired wealth or to augment wealth already acquired. Suppose I shave off my hair and beard and go forth into homelessness." Because he has undergone that loss through old age, he does that and he goes forth into homelessness. This is called the loss through old age. But Master Ratapala is now still young, a black-haired young man endowed with the blessing of youth in the prime of life. Master Ratapala has not undergone any loss through old age. What has he known or seen or heard that he has gone forth from the home life into homelessness? Right? It's this kind of puzzlement. Usually when people go forth, they have a good reason. They are getting old, or the next one is they're getting sick, or they have lost all their wealth, right? So you can't really do anything anymore. And the last one is the loss of relatives. So you have nobody to look after you, nobody who cares for you. And all of these things, that is when people ordinary, maybe when people would have gone forth, perhaps in those days. But Ratapala, doesn't have any of these things. In fact, he is the son of one of the wealthiest family in this little village, Tulakotita. What have you known? What have you seen? What have you heard? What is it that made you go forth in this strange teaching called Buddhism, right? This thing which seems to have been not very well known in this particular place because it was far away from where the Buddha normally would have taught. So this is what the king is asking, and you have the same thing, the same paragraph for sickness, wealth, and relatives. And then the king concludes in paragraph 34, he says, "Master Ratapala, these are the four kinds of loss. Because they have undergone these four kinds of loss, some people here shave off their hair and beard, put on the yellow robe, and go forth from home life into homelessness. Master Ratapala has not undergone any of these. What has he known or seen or heard that he has gone forth from the home life into homelessness?" So now we get this teaching that Ratapala had heard from the Buddha that made him so gain so much confidence that he was willing to sacrifice his life by lying on the floor so that he would be able to go forth. So that's how much impression this made on the young Ratapala. "Great king, there are four summaries of the Dhamma that have been taught by the Blessed One who knows and sees. Accomplished and fully enlightened, knowing and seeing and hearing them, I went forth from the home life into homelessness. What are the four? Number one, life in any world is unstable. It is swept away. This is the first summary of the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One who knows and sees. Accomplished and fully enlightened, knowing and seeing and hearing this, I went forth from the home life into homelessness. Life in any world has no shelter and no protector. This is the second summary of the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One who knows and sees. Life in any world has nothing of its own. One has to leave all and pass on. This is the third summary of the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One who knows and sees. Life in any world is incomplete. insatiate, the slave of craving here. This is the fourth summary of the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One who knows and sees. Great King, these are the four summaries of the Dhamma that have been taught by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened. Knowing and seeing and hearing them, I went forth from the home life into homelessness. And then the King says, Master Ratapala said, life in any world is unstable, it is swept away. How should the meaning of that statement be understood? What do you think, great King, when you were 20 or 25 years old, were you an expert rider of elephants, an expert horseman, an expert charioteer, an expert archer, an expert swordsman, strong in thighs and arms, sturdy, capable in battle? When I was 20 or 25 years old, Master Ratapala, I was an expert rider of elephants, etc., etc., strong in thighs and arms, sturdy, capable in battle. Sometimes I wonder if I had supernormal power then. I do not see anyone who could equal me in strength. What do you think, great King? Are you now as strong in thighs and arms, as sturdy and as capable in battle? No, Master Ratapala, now I am old, aged, burdened with years, advanced in life, come to the last stage. My years have turned 80. Sometimes I mean to put my foot here, and I put my foot somewhere else. Great King, it was on account of this that the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened, said, life in any world is unstable, it is swept away. And when I knew and saw and heard this, I went forward from the home life into homelessness. It is wonderful, Master Ratapala, it is marvelous how well that has been expressed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. Life in any world is unstable, it is swept away. It is indeed so. So this is what we have been looking at before, a couple of days ago, when we looked at the idea of contemplation of old age and death, right? How life is swept away like this fast mountain stream coming down the mountain. We're running around, and one day you are old and then you die. And you realize that you have just been running to your grave all along. So that is the teaching here. Life in any world, it also translates as, if you like, beings are unstable, they are swept away. That would be also acceptable there, the same idea basically. So sometimes you have to have the clarity, right? When you are ready to hear a teaching, sometimes it can be a very simple teaching like this. Life in any world is unstable, it is swept away. Something very simple, but because you're ready, because your faculties are strong, because you are, you have the background or whatever to be able to understand what's going on, a simple teaching goes straight to your heart, and it penetrates deep inside, and then you say, wow, I've got to go forth. I've got to do something else with my life than I otherwise would be doing. So, that's the first one. Okay, we have already looked at this in a bit detail before, so I will just move on to the next one. Master Ratapala, there exist in this court elephant troops and cavalry and chariot troops and infantry, which will serve to subdue any threats to us. Now, Master Ratapala said, life in any world has no shelter and no protector. How should the meaning of that statement be understood? What do you think, great King? Do you have a chronic ailment? I have a chronic wind ailment, Master Ratapala. Sometimes my friends and companions, kinsmen and relatives, stand around me thinking, now King Kauravya is about to die. Now King Kauravya is about to die. The wind ailment means it's a kind of classification that they use in India in those days. The ailments were divided into, depending on the type of ailment, some were called wind ailments, and there were it's a very broad category of various kind of illnesses that can be included in that. What do you think, great king? Can you command your friends and companions, your kinsmen and relatives? Come, my good friends and companions, my kinsmen and relatives, all of you present, share this painful feeling so that I may feel less pain. Or do you have to feel that pain yourself alone? I cannot command my friends and companions, my relatives and kinsmen thus, Master Ratapala. I have to feel that pain alone. Great King, it was on account of this that the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and enlightened, said, life in any world has no shelter and no protector. And when I knew and saw and heard this, I went forth from the home life into homelessness. It is wonderful, Master Ratapala, it is marvelous how well that has been expressed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened. Life in any world has no shelter and no protector. It is indeed so. This is slightly different from what we have heard before, the idea that there is no shelter and protector. It means that there is, in the end, there's nobody you can go to, right, and say, help me, or sort this out for me, or if you don't live your life in the right way, then you have a problem regardless of anybody around you. So the people around you cannot kind of sort out your problems for you. You have to take responsibility for your life. And one of the things that this includes, of course, from the Buddhist point of view, is that there is no God, right? There is no God who can sort of say, oh, I made all these mistakes, please forgive me so I can kind of, you know, go to heaven or whatever afterwards anyway. There is no protector like that from the Buddhist point of view. And this is something that is more clearly expressed elsewhere. So this is one aspect of that. Another aspect is like this idea of sometimes of gurus that we have, right? And especially in religions, and you take on a guru and you place too much of your life in the hands of the guru, of the teacher. So again, instead of taking responsibility yourself, you place too much emphasis on that. And that too is also dangerous, because the guru, even if it is a good guru, sometimes they will take advantage, but even if it's a good one, you have a problem unless you take responsibility for yourself. And this is kind of the thing about Buddhism, and the thing which is on the one hand scary sometimes, this idea that, well, actually there isn't really anyone who can help you out. You have to take responsibility for your own life, right? Sometimes people think that is a bit too much to have responsibility for your life, because sometimes we feel we don't see clearly, we don't really understand what's going on. So how can I take full responsibility? It's nice, sometimes it's nice to have somebody else that you can sort of go to and say, oh, you know, maybe you can kind of take some of these burdens away from me. So sometimes it's scary, but once you get used to the idea that you are responsible for your own life, responsible for your own, for doing what is right, avoiding what is bad, it actually empowers you. It empowers you, because instead of somebody else ultimately being responsible, it means that you can do what is right. You can reap the results of that. If somebody else is ultimately responsible, sometimes you feel disempowered, right? Because this being or this thing or whatever it is, they are the ones who kind of pull all the levers and everything. But if you are responsible, then ultimately it also empowers you. This is the idea, I think the most important thing about this, is that you actually, this gives you this possibility of doing the practice, doing what is right, and then reaping the results as a consequence. So it is actually a good thing. It may seem scary and a bit worrisome straight away, but you actually realize quickly enough that actually this is a good thing, that you have responsibility for yourself. This doesn't mean that there is nothing to rely on in this world. There are things to rely on, right? This is what the Dhamma is about. It's something you can, something you can rely on, something you can use as a guidance in a sense. And that is what, faith or confidence in a spiritual teaching is all about. You have confidence in something because what you see in that teaching, you see something useful and powerful. You see other people who have done it. They have gotten the results. So there is something to rely on. But in the end, you have to take responsibility. You have to be independent in your practice. Okay, so let us move on to the next one. Master Ratapala, there exists in this court abundant gold coins and bullion stored away in vaults and lofts. Now, Master Ratapala said, life in any world has nothing of its own. One has to leave all and pass on. How should the meaning of that statement be understood? What do you think, great king? You now enjoy yourself provided and endowed with the five chords, the five types of sensual pleasures, right? The eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, and the body. But will you be able to have it of the life to come? Let me likewise enjoy myself provided and endowed with these same five sorts of sensual pleasure. Or will others take over this property while you will have to pass on according to your actions? I cannot have it thus of the life to come, Master Ratapala. On the contrary, others will take over this property while I shall have to pass on according to my actions. Great King, it was on account of this that the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened, said, life in any world has nothing of its own. One has to leave all and pass on. And when I saw and knew and heard this, I went forth from the home life into homelessness. It is wonderful, Master Ratapala, it is marvelous how well that has been expressed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened. Life in any world has nothing of its own. One has to leave all and pass on. It is indeed so. So you can see again how the Dhamma is so unified. You see the same themes coming in slightly different ways, expressed in slightly different words, but the same themes, you see it coming, you know, again and again in the suttas. And here is exactly the thing I was talking about the other day, the simile of the borrowed goods, right? The simile that we found in the Potalia Sutta, where the Potalia says that sense pleasures or sensual objects are like borrowed goods. You have to give them up. You enjoy them for a while in this life, and then at the very latest when you die, you have to give it all up. You have nothing of your own. Beings have nothing of their own in the world, right? This is what it's saying here. You don't actually own anything. If you own stuff, you could control it. You can't. You have to give it all up. So this is the message here. It's a very powerful message. And remember, it certainly, of course, includes all the material goods and the material wealth you have in this world, your house, all your belongings, all that kind of stuff. But it goes beyond that. It also has to do with your friends and relatives, right? Even that you have to give up. So these are the things that are even closer to us than our possessions very often. Everything that is dear and pleasing to you, the Buddha says elsewhere, will become otherwise, will change. You will have to give it up. And not only that, but even a lot of the, of course, your physical body will have to be given up, right? So again, you know, you spend all this time sorting out your body, making sure it looks just right, but then you have to give it up, and it's going to end up in a little pile of ashes, and then goes into the wall of Bodhinyana Monastery or whatever. So the physical body is also going to be given up. But not only that, but also much of who you are, who you take yourself to be, your sense of identity is very often bound up in the world around you, the people around you, who you are, your social position, your education, your sense of religious adherence, and all of these kind of things have to do with our identity is bound up with this world, right? Who we are in this life. And that too, if you identify too much with that and then you die, it's going to be difficult because suddenly all of that starts to disappear. It's like sometimes people who have very successful careers in life, and then they get old and they have to give up their career, and then they feel a sense of loss because they had a sense of importance, essential social standing, right? And then the end of life comes and it's like, what now? Nothing anymore. And this is a part of the thing that also happens when we when we die. So all of these things are borrowed goods. They are not yours. Nothing in this life is your own. So again, the same themes that we have been seeing throughout this retreat. Okay, so let's go on to the fourth one, the last one of these things. Now, Master Ratapala said, life in any world is incomplete, insatiate, the slave of craving. How should the meaning of that statement be understood? What do you think, great king? Do you reign over the rich Kuru country? Yes, Master Ratapala, I do. What do you think, great king? Suppose a trustworthy and reliable man came to you from the east and said, please know, great king, that I have come from the east, and there I saw a large country, powerful and rich, very populous and crowded with people. There are plenty of elephant troops there, plenty of cavalry, chariot troops and infantry. There is plenty of ivory there, and plenty of gold coins and bullions, both unworked and worked, and plenty of women for wives. When, with your present forces, you can conquer it. Conquer it then, great king. What would you do? We would conquer it and reign over it, Master Ratapala. What do you think, great king? Suppose a trustworthy and reliable man came to you from the west, from the north, from the south, from across the sea, and said, please, great king, know that I have come from across the sea, and there I saw a large country with all of these things. Conquer it then, great king. What would you do? We would conquer it too and reign over it, Master Ratapala. Great king, it was on account of this that the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened, said, life in any world is incomplete, insatiate, the slave of craving. And when I knew and saw and heard this, I went forth from the home life into homelessness. It is wonderful, Master Ratapala, it is marvelous how well that has been expressed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. Life in any world is incomplete, insatiate, the slave of craving. So it is indeed so. It kind of drives home the point. It doesn't matter how much you have, right? If craving is still there, there's still stuff you want. This is an extreme case, the king who never has enough land, right? And of course, that kind of craving for a king who kind of gets used to ruling, used to power, it means that even if you rule the whole earth, it still wouldn't be enough. Then you would want to rule the moon and Mars and the solar system and what else? And just going on and on forever. There's no end to these things. But even on a smaller scale, there is no end to craving, right? There's always new things that you want. Always this sense of never being satisfied, this hole inside you, this itch which is always there that you want to scratch, that always has to be fulfilled and to kind of filled in. You feel incomplete, not satisfied. And this is the problem with the world. And it goes on and on and on forever. And there is no end to that. You are the slave of craving. It's a nice way of looking at it, right? Usually we think that craving is our servant. That's normally how we think of it. Craving is my servant because craving tells me what I need. It tells me where I have to go. And then because craving is my servant, I get all this stuff, right? And it makes me happy. But actually, the Buddhist point of view is the exact opposite. Craving is not your servant. You are the servant of craving, because craving forces you to run around, forces you to be restless and agitated, forces you out in the world, trying always to get new stuff, always increasing, never satisfied, always feeling this sense of emptiness and hole inside, which can never be satisfied. Until one day you realize, actually, perhaps I shouldn't be going this way anymore. Perhaps there is something else. Perhaps there is another way of finding that satisfaction and happiness. And this, of course, is what the Buddhist teaching is. It's not the whole of the Buddhist teaching, but it's a large part of what it is about, to fill in that hole inside of us, to find a sense of satisfaction and completeness and fulfillment. For the first time, you feel fulfilled, right? You're no longer the slave of craving. You feel in charge. You feel peaceful. You feel at ease and you feel relaxed. And this is kind of the one of the things that Buddhism takes you towards. And this is what samadhi is about, and virtue is about. It leads in that direction, and a state of deep meditation takes you there. Buddhism goes even further, right? Buddhism, beyond that, comes the insights. But that is a very kind of important part of the Buddha's teachings. So, there you are. That's the Ratapala Sutta for you. I think that's probably enough on that sutta. It kind of summarizes a few of the themes in a nice way. What I thought I would do, because we have a bit of time extra, is to go back to the sutta that I skipped before, which is called the Born from Those Who Are Dear. It's quite a simple sutta, but it also has a very nice and, I think, important message to convey. So let's have a look at that one. MN, Majjhima Nikaya, MN 87, Born from Those Who Are Dear. Around page 10, roughly. Okay. So we are still here. We're still working our way through the Noble Eightfold Path, right? So if you remember, we started off with the right view. Then we were looking at right intention. Looking at the factors of morality, right speech, right action, also including right livelihood. And what I've been spending the last few days on is this idea of right effort. Right effort being kind of one of the crucial elements of the Noble Eightfold Path. It is quite easy to understand what morality is in general, but this idea of right effort is quite hard to understand. So this is why we've been talking about right effort. How to attend, how to learn, to look at in the world, look at yourself, look at people in such a way that it increases your sense of compassion, of metta and all these things, and takes away the defilements of the mind, right? This is what we've been talking about, how to deal with the world of sensuality, to reduce the attraction to sensuality, how to use things like death contemplation to reduce the defilements. So we try to move towards a state of mind where the defilements are quite subdued. They're still maybe a little bit there, but they're quite subdued, to really enable meditation to take off. This is what all of this is about, that we've been talking about. We're moving towards meditation, becoming possible. And this next sutta is a little bit part of that, Born from Those Who Are Dear. It's about reminding ourselves of the problems that can arise, even when you have someone who is very dear to you, the problems that can arise from that. We always tend to think of the happiness that comes from family and friends, and the Buddha says, you have to be reminded that there is another side to that happiness. There is a side of problems as well. And this is what this is about. So it helps us to, again, free up some of those defilements that can arise as a consequence of these problems. So this is how it goes. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savati in Jeta's Grove and Atapindika's Park. Now, on that occasion, a certain householder's dear and beloved only son had died. After his son's death, he had no more desire to work or to eat. He kept going to the charnel ground, you know, like the cemetery, and crying, "My only son, where are you? My only son, where are you?" Then that householder went to the Blessed One, and after paying homage to him, sat down at one side. The Blessed One said to him, "Householder, your faculties are not those of one in control of his own mind. Your faculties are deranged." "How could my faculties not be deranged, Venerable Sir? For my dear and beloved only son has died. Since he died, I have no more desire to work or to eat. I keep going to the charnel ground and crying, 'My only son, where are you? My only son, where are you?'" "So it is, householder, so it is. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear." "Venerable sir, who would ever think that sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear?" "Venerable sir, happiness and joy are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear." Then, displeased with the Blessed One's words, disapproving of them, the householder rose from his seat and left. So this is what happens, right? This is it should really be so obvious at that point that there is a drawback with getting too attached and getting too close in this way. And the drawback is that you will suffer as a consequence. But of course, when you are blinded like that, when you're blinded by sorrow, it is often very hard to see, because your mind is, as it says here, you are deranged, right? You're going out of your mind, you're going kind of slightly crazy, you can't see clearly anymore. And so you refuse to even see what is absolutely obvious to everybody else. And so you have a serious problem. So this is the part of the problem in life, when you get too attached and too kind of caught up in the people around you. Very simple message, but very, very powerful. Now, on that occasion, some gamblers were playing with dice not far from the Blessed One. Then the householder went to those gamblers and said, "Just now, sirs, I went to the recluse Gotama, and after paying homage to him, I sat down at one side. When I had done so, the recluse Gotama said to me, 'Householder, your faculties are not those of one in control of his own mind.'" And he repeats the full conversation. "Venerable sir, happiness and joy are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear." Then, displeased with the recluse Gotama's word, disapproving of them, I rose from my seat and left. And then the gamblers say, "So it is, householder, so it is. Happiness and joy are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear." Then the householder think, "I agree with the gamblers." So I'm not sure that it's an idea of gamblers here. I think gamblers are kind of slightly dodgy, right? They're not really the kind of the most reliable of people, so that's why they agree with him. So I think this is the kind of the idea here. Eventually, this story reached the king's palace. Then King Pasenadi of Kosala told Queen Mallika, "This is what has been said by the recluse Gotama, Mallika. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear. Arise from those who are dear." "If that has been said by the Blessed One, sire, then it is so." And then the king replies, "No matter what the recluse Gotama says, Mallika applauds it thus. If that has been said by the Blessed One, sire, then it is so. Just as a pupil applauds whatever his teacher says to him, saying, 'So it is, teacher, so it is.' So too, Mallika, no matter what the recluse Gotama says, you applaud it thus. If that has been said by the Blessed One, sire, then it is so. Be off, Mallika, away, away with you." So the king is getting a bit jealous here of the Buddha, and she's listening more to the Buddha than she's listening to him. And so King Pasenadi is this very powerful king in India at the time, and Mallika is his chief wife or chief queen, right? So they are very close. And sometimes in the suttas it seems that Mallika has more wisdom than the king, and this might be one of those cases. So the king gets a bit fed up, and he says to his wife, "Okay, you know, I don't want to see you anymore." But Queen Mallika is very sharp, and then the next part of the sutta then is about how she kind of is able to get the king to come around to her viewpoint. And this is quite interesting. It shows you how, if you are skillful and wise, how you can help other people to come around and understand things. And this is very useful. Often, sometimes people get defensive, right? If we do things in the wrong way, they get defensive. They're not really willing to listen to us. But if we're able to say things in the right way, at the right time, in the right place, we can kind of get people to open their minds. And then they can see things that otherwise they would never be able to see. And this is one of the powers of being wise, is that you can do these kind of things. So let's have a look and see what Queen Mallika did. So this is what happened. Then Queen Mallika addressed the Brahmin Nalijanga, "Come, Brahmin, go to the Blessed One and pay homage in my name with your head at his feet, and ask whether he is free from illness and affliction and is healthy, strong, and abiding in comfort, saying, 'Venerable Sir, Queen Mallika pays homage with her head at the Blessed One's feet and asks whether the Blessed One is free from illness and abiding in comfort. Then say this: Venerable sir, have these words been uttered by the Blessed One, Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. And then learn well what the Blessed One replies, and report it to me, for Tathagatas do not speak untruth. Yes, madam, he replied, and he went to the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side and said, Master Gotama, Queen Mallika pays homage with her head at Master Gotama's feet and asks whether he is free from illness, etc. And she says this, Venerable Sir, have these words been spoken by the Blessed One? Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. So it is, Brahmin, so it is. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. It can be understood from this, Brahmin, how sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. Once in this same Savati, there was a certain woman whose mother died. Owing to her mother's death, she went mad, lost her mind, and wandered from street to street, from crossroad to crossroad, saying, Have you seen my mother? Have you seen my mother? It can also be understood from this how sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. Once in the same Savati, there was a certain woman whose father died, whose brother died, whose sister died, whose son died, whose daughter died, whose husband died. Owing to her husband's death, she went mad, lost her mind, wandered from street to street, from crossroad to crossroad, saying, Have you seen my husband? Have you seen my husband? And then the same thing in case of a man. Once in the same Savati, there was a certain man whose mother died, whose father died, whose brother died, whose sister died, whose son died, whose daughter died, whose wife died. Owing to his wife's death, he went mad, lost his mind, wandered from street to street, from crossroad to crossroad, saying, Have you seen my wife? Have you seen my wife? And it can also be understood from this, how sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. Once in this same Savati, there was a certain woman who went to live with her relative's family. That was the usual way things were at the time in India. Her relatives wanted to divorce her from her husband and give her to another whom she did not want. Then the woman said to her husband, Lord, these relatives of mine want to divorce me from you and give me to another whom I do not want. Then that man cut the woman in two and disemboweled himself, thinking, We shall be together in the afterlife. It can be also be understood from this, how sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. So, there you are. Okay. Then, delighting and rejoicing in the Blessed One's words, the Brahmin Nalijanga rose from his seat, went to Queen Mallika and reported to her his entire conversation with the Blessed One. Then Queen Mallika went to King Pasenadi of Kosala and asked him, What do you think, sire? Is Princess Vajiri dear to you? Yes, Mallika, Princess Vajiri is dear to me. That's his daughter, Princess Vajiri. And I think she is the daughter of the prince of the two of them. What do you think, sire, if change and alteration took place in Princess Vajiri, would sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair arise in you? Change and alteration in Princess Vajiri would mean an alteration in my life. How could sorrow, lamentation, pain, and grief, and despair not arise in me? It was with reference to this, sire, that the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened, said, Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. So you can see what the Queen is doing here. She takes the very general statement by the Buddha and then she applies it directly to the life of her husband, the King, and says, well, you know, if this happened, what would be your reaction? How would you feel if your daughter, change and alteration is a way of saying either dying or getting very ill. That's what it means, basically. So if your daughter was to get very, very ill or even die, would that affect you? Would it not affect you? And the answer is, of course, it would affect him, right? That's the answer. What do you think, sire? Is the noble queen Vasabha dear to you? Is general Vidudaba dear to you? Am I dear to you? Are Kasi and Kosala dear to you? General Vidudaba is his son. Queen Vasabha is another queen, I think, another one of his wives. And Kasi and Kosala is the country, all the land that he rules over, right? Yes, Malika, Kasi and Kosala are dear to me. We owe it to Kasi and Kosala that we use Kasi sandalwood and wear garlands, scents, and unguents. What do you think, sire, if change and alteration took place in Kasi and Kosala? Would sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair arise in you? Change and alteration in Kasi and Kosala would mean an alteration in my life. How could sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair not arise in me? It was reference to this, sire, that the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, said, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are born from those who are dear, arise from those who are dear. It is wonderful, Malika, it is marvelous how far the Blessed One penetrates with wisdom and sees with wisdom. Come, Malika, give me the ablution water. Then King Pasenadi of Kosala rose from his seat, and arranging his upper robe on one shoulder, he extended his hands in reverential salutation towards the Blessed One, and uttered this exclamation three times. Honor to the Blessed One, accomplished and fully awakened. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Honor to the Blessed One, accomplished and fully awakened. Honor to the Blessed One, accomplished and fully awakened. And that is the beginning of King Pasenadi becoming a disciple of the Buddha. From then on, he becomes a very staunch disciple. So you can see how just one person being wise and doing things in the right way turns things around by saying things in a way whereby people can comprehend what is going on rather than be put off. Once, if you're told something in the wrong way, you can be put off. In the right way, you can comprehend it. It's interesting that the beginning of the sutta, the Buddha speaks to this man, right? And this man doesn't understand. And he gets put off, basically, by what the Buddha is saying because he isn't ready or whatever. So it seems that even the Buddha sometimes gets it slightly wrong, right? Or perhaps he was seeing a bigger picture, I don't know. But it looks from there that even the Buddha sometimes gets it wrong. He's not able, perhaps, to see exactly what the right thing to do is. Or perhaps there just wasn't anything right to do. Perhaps it was a situation whereby nothing could really be done. And he had to just give it time for it to ripen for the man to understand what was happening here. Anyway, so the point here is just that wherever you attach in the world, whatever it is, material things, a family, whatever it is, attachment always, in the end, must lead to suffering and problems. So how do we deal with that? What do we actually do? Do we get a divorce and kind of go living by ourselves in a cave? Is that the kind of the answer to this? And not really, that's not really the answer. The answer is just to keep this in mind, right? And remember this, so that when you keep it in mind, it means that you are changing your view a little bit, you're kind of slightly moving in a different direction. And even just by remembering this, the grip of attachment is loosening a little bit, right? And you understand, because just that memory enables you not to hold on quite so hard as you did before. So don't make any drastic change to your life. You just take this on board and think about if it makes sense. And if it makes sense to you, it will have an effect on how you live. If it doesn't make any sense, it won't affect you. That's okay as well. And then it also reminds you of the importance of the Buddhist path. It reminds that this path of Buddhism, ultimately, it leads to the detachment of all of these things. It leads to the loosening of the attachments in the world. It leads to a sense of independence, whereby you are freeing yourself from all of these problems. This is what the path leads to. So these two things go together. You understand the power of the path, and it also leads to a slight detachment right here, right now. So this is how to use these things in a skillful way. Sometimes people overreact a little bit and they kind of do silly things, but it's just there for you to think differently. That's really all it is. Okay, so that is the two suttas this morning, a little bit of entertainment today with some nice story from the time of the Buddha. This story is also nice because you have the kind of, it's almost like a domestic scene, right? You have the king and the queen sort of, you know, arguing a bit with each other. And it kind of makes it come alive, right? You can really see how this probably was the case. This is how people act, right? This is what people are like. And it kind of brings it home that this is these things are real stories. These things actually happened. Anyway, so this afternoon, I'm going to, if you go back to the Ratapala Sutta you saw before, we're just doing before. Now, just after the Ratapala Sutta, there is a short paragraph again from the shorter sutta on the simile of the elephant's footprint, MBN